This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for business and IT professionals. This episode is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. This is episode 65 with Taz Gray. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and once again, I'm joined by Taz Gray. Taz, how are you going?
Good, thanks, Robert. How are you today?
Not too bad. Obviously, another week down, more Office 365 announcements. Things keep ploughing on at another never-ending pace, it would seem.
They do indeed. It's a fast-moving place to be.
I think it's exciting for you know people in technology, I think, or you know the right people in technology like us who are keen to see all the stuff coming out. But obviously, it's a very daunting prospect for a lot of other people, some traditional resellers looking at the pace of change, but also customers as well. I mean, how are you finding people in general, you know, coming up to speed with these sort of products? Are they looking for them and keen on them, or are they struggling to keep up with what's happening?
I think some people are definitely looking to see what they can do with all the new functionality, but staying on top of it is obviously difficult and requires someone, I guess, like yourself or like myself, to really help understand what's there and what are the useful applications in business.
So I think the two things that I tell people is the two most important sites that if you want to keep up with Office 365 is the Office 365 roadmap. We can put the links to these in the show notes, but basically that will give you an indication of what's coming, when's coming. So again, the Office 365 roadmap, and the other one is the Office 365 service descriptions. Now, that's obviously a bit more tech, a bit more granular, but again, if you want to know if a certain feature is enabled in Office 365, your service description is the place to point to. So I would suggest, again, if you don't know already, have a look for Office 365 roadmap and the Office 365 service description. So one of the major things that they have released recently is their video service, which basically allows you to create a video style portal. You upload a video and then you can play it very much, I suppose, along a YouTube's line, but seems to be very powerful. At the back end, the videos are actually stored in Azure and the content is then pushed out through the Azure Media Services. So again, closer integration between those two services. So have you had a chance to have a look at the video service yet, Taz?
I have, yeah. It was actually, it was shown to me at the Office 365 meetup last week, and I did have a play with it over the weekend, uploaded a few videos, and it looks pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's, again, we're seeing that the trend obviously is a lot of people prefer to, engage through video rather than through text necessarily. So again, that's why YouTube has proven to be so popular. So an enterprise area, an area where a business can control those features, they can, for example, record something on Link and then upload that to their portal for use by their customers. I've started having a look at, like I said, put a few videos up there, and I'm interested to see how you can potentially roll that out and use it as an extranet. So maybe something like using it as a occupational health and safety or a training portal or something like that is certainly very exciting and should be enabled in most portals now. And I think that gives people a lot more flexibility and also indicates that the rate of change that we're seeing with the Office 365 product. So if you haven't seen the video portal, just go in and check that out. Now, what has also changed is basically how we now navigate Office 365, which means it may be a challenge to actually find the video portal. So, I mean, what's your take on what they're now calling the app launcher, Taz?
I think it looks really good, and we were definitely running out of space along the top there because Microsoft keep adding products, and there was just it was getting very tight on space. So they've now put a nice little button there, which pops out into a little box with a bunch of icons. I think it looks really good.
Well, I think the thing is that the way I see it is obviously once you get used to it. So in the top left-hand corner, you've now got basically what appears to be a box of nine, smaller boxes. I suppose you click on that, and it then blows out into this app launcher where you get an icon for each of the services. So rather than having an individual menu item across the top, you basically have a number of buttons which allow you to navigate through the service. So it can be a bit jarring at first when the button bar does disappear completely, but now that we have the app launcher, you get familiar with it, I think it works quite well, and you can see that it's obviously optimized for use on tablets and touch PCs. I mean, again, is that the way you see that Microsoft have gone with that?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, you can see that they're thinking about the mobile users with that one. And
I think it's also, I don't know if you've seen that what you can also do with Azure is you can create a single sign-on portal. So for every Office 365 tenant, you also get a free Azure tenant. So if you log into Azure with your Office 365 global admin, put in a credit card, the credit card won't be charged, but you will then see the Azure services, and down the bottom is one of those is Active Directory. So you can go in and have a look at the directory service that is tied to your Office 365, because Office 365 uses Azure Active Directory. In there, you're able to actually go in and create a single sign-on portal for web apps. So you can go in and create basically a portal, a website that users can go to, and they can not only log into Office 365, but they can log into web-based apps like Dropbox, Box, Xero Accounting, all that sort of stuff, and they do that automatically. So, I mean, that's pretty powerful.
That is a massively powerful feature, and one that we've actually been using here just to get a feel for it. Where some of the apps do have that deep integration with the single sign-on, such as Dropbox, and it does make management of web apps very easy, which is something that I believe is the next great challenge for a lot of businesses.
Well, I think I was going to say that the other side of it too is you can all, the feature that's in preview is the app discovery. So you can put a little agent on your machines or on your employees' machines, and it will actually capture and report back to you as to which apps are actually running and which apps they're using, so then you can start controlling them.
That's right. And I do know that Microsoft are working very hard to get every possible web app in there. They really want people to start using that feature. So definitely something worth checking out.
Yeah, and I think, again, it integrates this close integration that we're beginning to see with the Azure and the Office 365. Obviously, they depend on each other quite markedly, but what we're seeing is that many features are being enabled across both platforms, and perhaps what a lot of people don't appreciate is that if you've got an Office 365 login, you've effectively got an Azure login as well. And Azure has a number of free services apart from the Active Directory stuff we've talked about. You can get free websites, you get free backup storage. So again, you can go in there and activate your Azure portal access and then basically play around with a number of free services. And the other benefit then is that if you want to then extend that into a paid service, if you want to run a couple of virtual machines or SQL or a web service, you can do that all under the one tenant. So again, beginning to make a lot of sense, beginning to provide the integration features. And I think to me, this is one of the major differentiators between Microsoft and its competitors. You're looking at this totally integrated solution that again works across these different platforms and really provides a great solution for customers, but I think also for IT resellers to get into. It certainly removes a lot of the issues around running up infrastructure and setting things up and patching and all that, and certainly releases them into the ability to wrap their own services. I mean, I think that's what your business is now focusing on, Taz?
Yeah, we're always looking for ways that we can, I guess, do more with the cloud, because as you say, we are being freed up from those traditional tasks of building infrastructure. It's all in the cloud now. It's just a few clicks of the mouse and you're up and running. So finding ways to add value is the challenge, I think, for a lot of IT companies.
And again, with the fast-paced rate of change, it's a matter of generally in business, you're not going to be able to do it all. So some of it you're going to obviously need to perhaps give away and focus on other stuff. I think that it provides an opportunity and threat. The fact that once more people understand this, if you're late to the game, you may not get the same opportunities because people are already in the game doing this sort of stuff. So.
Yeah, definitely. The market leaders out there are using this stuff quite heavily, as I understand it. So, there's a job in itself just staying up to date with this right now, I believe. And if you do that well, then you should be successful.
So again, if you are looking to keep up, obviously you can contact Taz or myself directly, but we will be looking to recommend that you have a look at the roadmap and then the service description. So what we're going to focus on with this episode is some of the differences between products like SharePoint Online. So what many people may not realize is that Office 365 is not only a suite of products, you can also buy individual products. So when you go out and buy Office 365, most commonly people buy it as a suite of products, so a grouping of products. So you'll go out and buy, for example, the E3 license, the Enterprise Level 3 license, which will give you Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, Link will also give you Office on the desktop. But you can actually go in and purchase those individual components as a standalone package if you want. So you could just, for example, purchase SharePoint Online and use that. You could just go and purchase something like the Office Suite. So if you want to have every version of Office to be consistent across your organization, you can go in and purchase basically the Office line itself. Now, one of the big advantages that Microsoft have added into just the odd Office product is the ability to have OneDrive. So every standalone version of the Office product now includes unlimited OneDrive storage, which again, one would think is aimed at getting people into the cloud initially. So you buy that SKU, you get the same version of Office deployed onto all your desktops and obviously onto 5 individual devices per user, but you also get unlimited cloud storage with OneDrive, so users can now start putting all their information up into the cloud. What's your feeling on that, Taz? Is that something that's going to work, do you think, getting people into the cloud?
Oh, definitely. And bundling it with the storage obviously helps. But I think that flexibility of being able to pick and choose which elements you need, because, of course, not everyone needs the full suite. So it's a good approach from Microsoft. And we've certainly got clients who are only using individual SKUs. So in my experience, it's great.
I think one of the advantages now is with the new packages is you get the ability to mix and match. So before, we were somewhat locked into using maybe just an M plan, and we couldn't add, for example, Project Online. But with the new SKUs, what we can now do is mix and match. So we could start out with effectively what is, you know, the small business product, and if we wanted to, we could then go in and add more. So the entry-level product of just the Office on the desktop plus OneDrive storage is known as business. We could then scale up eventually to maybe an E3 plan if required. But we can also mix and match, meaning that we can have some employees who are just using the desktop apps and others who are using a combination of all the services. So I think that's the big advantage. The major issue I have is that OneDrive is typically aimed at replacing individuals' unique storage. It's not really designed for team collaboration. That's known in SharePoint terms as team sites. And it seems to me that Microsoft is obviously putting so much resource and effort behind the OneDrive, but leaving the team sites somewhat behind, which is creating this, well, how does this work if you're talking about a collaboration product called SharePoint? You're encouraging people to put all their information in silos again. So I think that's an interesting thing, and I'm looking forward to seeing how Microsoft deal with that or what their direction is. I mean, are you finding that also as a bit of a question mark from your point, Taz?
Definitely. I think that no one's really solve that problem all that well in the cloud yet, so it is something that I'm keeping an eye on just to see, I guess, where we end up and what the solution is. So it's very much, yeah, it's up in the air at the moment, I would say.
And part of it is that, you know, if OneDrive for business is now unlimited storage, typically what you'll see is the client wants to copy all their file server data up to OneDrive, and then because they don't trust the cloud, they want to sync it down to every desktop. So
that's right.
The question then becomes, okay, with unlimited storage, how do you sync unlimited files back to every desktop?
Yeah, which is a challenge, especially since there is a limitation on the number of files that you can sync. So,
and I think, again, that's another point that Microsoft hopefully is working very hard on, is to develop that sync client. We've seen a collaboration between them and Dropbox to do that sort of thing. So hopefully they'll be coming out with a really good sync client that will not only install on a workstation, but will also install on things like a Mac and maybe go on a server and provide a single point of synchronization up to potentially OneDrive, but hopefully team sites as well, being that that's team collaboration.
Yeah, and we're very much looking forward to something like that coming along, because there is a big gap right now, I believe.
Yeah, and again, I'm sure Microsoft is working on it hard, but again, the major thing is you want to get clients to the cloud. The marketing message is, you know, we can move all our files there, but again, the client typically, rightly or wrongly, more wrongly than rightly, I think, but they want to synchronize everything back to their desktop. So they want to copy everything up, not to have a file server, and they want to synchronize that, you know, 1,000 million gigs then back to every desktop, because they're not, 100% sure with it. So there are some challenges around that, and hopefully Microsoft will be addressing that. So, but again, what we see is individual packages, remember. So what we're going to focus on in this episode, we're going to talk around the SharePoint offering. So we have typically two SKUs or two products around SharePoint Online, that being SharePoint Online Plan 1 and SharePoint Online Plan 2. So when you buy the most basic suites, With Office 365, you basically purchase the SharePoint Online Plan 1. Now, what are some of the differences between the two packages? Any ideas there, Taz? What's the difference between them?
Yeah, there are a few key things. I would say the main ones being data loss prevention and enterprise search features, e-discovery, ACM and compliance, basically.
So what's DLP in English? Have you got a good
definition? That's a good question. So data loss prevention, which is effectively preventing sensitive information from leaving the organization.
It's pretty cool, actually. I mean, I don't know if you had a chance to play with it, especially with the Exchange. It's now beginning to roll out to SharePoint, but you can do things like document fingerprinting. So you can take a template of a document that you do not wish to leave the organization. So maybe it's a medical record or customer record. You can upload that to Office 365, and then if somebody tries to send a document that looks like that template, they will then be warned and certain actions can be taken. So the data loss prevention stuff's pretty good. For me,
very good.
The other big advantage of SharePoint Online Plan 2 is the fact it now supports the Power BI features. So it supports the ability to take a spreadsheet created in Excel on the desktop using Power Pivot, Power Query, Power View, and push that up into the enterprise space and add the Power BI feature to give you a full range of interactive dashboards and things like that. The other option that it does provide that many people seem to be in Australia at least very keen on is the remote desktop services. So if you have typically the more advanced plan, the enterprise plans, then you get the ability to do remote desktop. So in the SharePoint world, they're probably the main features. We obviously get things like form services, we get access services, we get Excel services, which provide a great level of functionality. So although we get the ability to edit and view documents, Microsoft Office documents with Office Online, things like Excel services and access services provide a lot more power when you take those data files up into the cloud. And this is something I think that Taz is really keen to speak about, is if we look at Access as the example here. So Access obviously is typically an on-premise application that you create database. So a database is just a number of tables that are connected together or linked together, and you can create a solution around that. Now, Access Services, as I understand it, allows you then to take that database, if it's compatible, and push it up into SharePoint Online Plan 2 and give it a nice web interface. I mean, is that a fair summary?
Yeah, I think you've nailed it there, Robert. I'd say so. So I guess the thing, as traditionally with Access, it has been a desktop application and it runs a database which is stored locally, either on your machine or on a network folder. And that's worked pretty well for a number of years. In fact, I would say there are quite a large number of businesses out there that actually rely on Access to run their business. I'm sure you would have come across that more than once over the years, Robert.
Yeah, I think, again, it's very common. And I think the other thing, too, you need to be aware of in this Office 365 world with the new plans is that the small business plans now have a version of Office that no longer includes Access. So if you are a client who needs Access on your desktop to run an application or to develop an application, you're going to need to look at the enterprise plan. So if you have an M plan, so the old M plans did allow Access on the desktop, but the new plans, which you'll have to migrate to before October 2015, is going to mean that Access will disappear. Now, my understanding is that although many clients may have used Access on the desktop, they only need Access, the full version of Access, to do development. You can get away with what's known, I believe, as the runtime edition if you're just, you know, manipulating tables or working with the application. Is that true?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure on that, but what I do know is that Microsoft are really pushing towards the web app model, which does not require access to use, basically. So instead of running the Windows app on your local machine, you now do it all via the browser, which has a number of benefits. Obviously, one, you don't need the license, and the second one being that you can access it from anywhere that you've got a web browser. So traditionally, you would have needed a computer with Access installed, and you would have needed access to that Access database, the file, which when it's stored on a local network is quite difficult to access from home or when you're away from the office on business, so on. This really goes a long way towards solving that problem.
So I think again, it's the trend that Microsoft has is moving more stuff to the cloud, providing more functionality, more flexibility. But importantly, also, I think it's the ability to put a nice web front end in. And I think one of the limitations, or one of the challenges, or one of the criticisms of something like Access has been is not being particularly user friendly in the way that it approaches or displays information. Now that obviously is typically a developer tool. It requires a different level of advanced user. But we're finding that, you know, more and more people are using Access, relying on Access, and if we could put maybe a nice web front end over it, it would certainly make it a much more appealing tool for many people. I mean, is that, you know, what you're finding in your experience?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's pretty spot on. I think the user interface element of Access, look, while it hasn't been great, it's certainly better now, but I don't think that wasn't a limitation that I saw. I actually would argue that one of the biggest problems with Access traditionally has been performance. So when typically what will happen in an organization is they will identify the need for an Access application to solve a problem. Someone will start developing it. It'll get a bit of traction in the business. They might put another staff member on it. Next thing you know, maybe half a dozen staff members are using the application, and it ends up on a network folder somewhere. And as many of us will know, when you put a file-based database on a network folder, performance starts to degrade very quickly. Have you seen that before, Robert?
Yeah, I think also too, part of it is like any application, is when a user start or something, you know, they typically see, like you said, someone in the business has a bit more skills around Access or wants to do some more power perhaps and starts using it. They may leave the business, but the application continues to grow and be required by the business. It starts off on a local, you know, C drive, and then it's moved to a network share, and that's when we start getting performance issues because it's not optimized for performance. Neither is the desktop that's reading the data, and neither is the network. So that, in many cases, is then becomes the frustration for a lot of users. And then the question is, you know, what do they do from there? So typically, the answer has been to implement something like, you know, SQL Express to use a, you know, Microsoft SQL version. So the Express version is free to overcome those sort of limitations. But it sounds as though that the cloud may be providing exactly what the customers are needing to overcome those sort of issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, the solution you just mentioned, which is moving the backend tables into SQL Server, is obviously a good solution and then provides the scalability that they're looking for and the performance gains. So effectively what we're doing by publishing our app into the cloud, it's going up into SharePoint Online, and the backend database is actually going into Azure SQL. So what that means is the performance now is much better because you're getting the scalability of the cloud, and it's a proper relational SQL database. So it's a really good solution.
So I think, again, we need to indicate that what you can do with Azure separately is you could run up a virtual machine in Azure, you could run it up that includes SQL, and you could put your SQL database in there just as you would on-premise. But what you can also get with Azure is typically, you know, platform as a service. So the platform as a service in this case is SQL. So all you need to worry about typically is uploading your data and then using the service. So the service gives you the scalability, it's fault tolerant, it's optimized for performance. So again, you don't have to worry about doing that on the server or patching it. It basically loads that into the server. So again, I think that's right. One of the key features going forward that the Microsoft, again, suite will offer is the ability to move in these sort of platforms that Microsoft handles all the hard work, and then it gives you that scalability with a few mouse clicks.
That's right. And in this case with an Access app, it's just happening seamlessly. You wouldn't even know that it's going in back into Azure. The only thing you would see is the performance gain, or it's which I think is fantastic. So the other benefit of that, of course, is that if you do end up with a whole bunch of data up there and you want to start doing some reporting on that data, because it's stored in an SQL database, it's very easy to just bolt on some reports. You can use Crystal reports, you can write a custom application in .NET or even ASP.NET web application if you like. You can use Power View, Excel, whatever you like. You've got full flexibility there, which again is something that was more difficult to do with a localized Access application. So
can we take any SQL database or any, you know, Access database up into Access services?
Well, there are some limitations on what you can do, and without getting into the details of that, in theory you can. It's not always straightforward. It really depends on how it's been written, but I would think that in most cases, with a bit of work, you could get it up there.
So I suppose the next question then is how do we get an application that's local in Access up into Access Services? What's the process we take to get to do that?
Well, I think the first thing you would want to do is probably hire a developer. And then they would look at the structure of the application, make sure it's compatible, and if it is, up it goes.
I think again there are some, and I suppose the other side of the coin is that it should be easy enough maybe to create a test SharePoint site or a test SharePoint site collection, provided you've obviously got SharePoint Online 10, Plan 2, and you could then publish that application up there. So let's say that a user or somebody wanted to actually give it a go and see what happened, what sort of steps do they need to take to do that?
Right. Now, what you can actually do here is when you do create a web application or a custom web application in Access on your local machine, it's just a matter of really, you can choose from a template. Microsoft give you a whole bunch of templates and you're up and running in a couple of clicks, no coding required. And then quite literally, there is just a publish button. And when you click on that button, it presents you with a dialog box. And your options are you can publish to your personal site in SharePoint, or you can publish to a site collection that belongs to your tenant. So it's really just a matter of creating a new web application in Access, hitting the publish button, telling it where to put it, and away you go, you're up and running.
So one of the examples that I saw at a conference a while back was they actually created a rock, paper, scissors application in Access that showed, like a person's hand going rock, paper, scissors, and then they published that up to SharePoint Online. So again, they did put the caveats that think some of the code, the macro code or the VB code behind it doesn't necessarily, has to be checked. Some of the structures and things like that need to be verified, but I mean, that was a relatively complex app compared to, what I've seen out there for most customers. So it seemed to indicate to me that in most cases the database should go up there. The other one that I've done myself is one of the demo apps that come with Access is a video, like a video app that basically allows you to monitor which videos you watch, which you have in your library. Basically, yeah, you could just take that and I publish that up and put a nice web front end on that which you can use to demo to clients. So again, that was pretty impressive as to how quickly and easy it was to get an Access app up there.
Yeah, and Microsoft have really focused here on making this achievable by the everyday person. They don't want you to require a developer in order to make this stuff happen. So they've really simplified the process, which is great because it means that anyone that's a little bit savvy can start publishing their own web apps up into their Office 365 SharePoint tenant.
Yeah, and I think that what a lot of people, a lot of people don't know is that with the, a lot of these sort of applications like Excel and Access and that, you can actually publish to SharePoint Online. So one of the options in the backstage area under the file area is the ability to publish as you notice, and it will push those things up. So again, Excel does that, a lot of stuff does that, which clients might not be aware of. And again, I always tell people to think of SharePoint as an extension of the Office apps. So you can put things like OneNote on SharePoint, you get that great ability to synchronize and share between multiple people and multiple versions of Access, as a multiple version of OneNote on different mobile devices. So again, it's the need to understand that the SharePoint Online component is very much an extension of the standard desktop apps which everybody's using.
Yeah, that's right. And it really empowers you with the ability to access that information from anywhere and to share it very easily, as you mentioned. So, I mean, the days of working locally on Office documents, in my opinion, should be well and truly over because you really want to get stuff up there and get it out to your colleagues and whoever else you might want to show it to. So, it's definitely the cloud way.
So, I mean, well, typically you would suggest that the most common desktop application that we find in the business is Excel. Why wouldn't we be use Why would we use Access, for example, over Excel? What are some of the benefits that we would see using, a database, a pure database rather than a spreadsheet?
Well, a spreadsheet has limitations in terms of performance. So once you load up a spreadsheet with a lot of information and you start performing data analysis on that information, things can really start to slow down. So the benefit of Access being a database, it's optimized for not only storing information in a more optimized way, but also processing that data. So I guess you would say it's a step up from using Excel is sort of how I look at it.
I think the other thing too is that where Access shines is when you're starting to manipulate fields which are more than just, a single entry. So I think Excel added with, so if you've got the Power Plus, the Pro Plus version with Power BI, Power Pivot, Power Maps and those sort of things, is you can now start manipulating huge amounts of data, and it does overcome some of those limitations. But where the limitation comes in is where those fields are maybe, like multiple lines of text or quite complex or images or things like that. I think that's where a database really begins to shine.
Look, an Excel spreadsheet is definitely not a good place to be storing data. You want to be storing that in a database. Excel, I would say, is definitely better for manipulating data. Would you agree with that, Robert?
Yeah, I think so. And I think you look at the high-end version of Excel, and what you've got is you can go into the data tab, and in the data tab you'll see that there's ability to pull from a number of external sources, and one of those obviously is a database. So one of the an example I had, we have worked with a client who has a lot of spreadsheets sent to them from different suppliers. They need to then manipulate those and work on those, and multiple people need to do that. So to me, it would make far more sense for them to bring those spreadsheets together and actually import them directly into a single centralized SQL style database. And then people who need to manipulate them with Excel could do so by using the data option in Excel. So rather than having multiple files and multiple spreadsheets with unknown names, they all go into a single SQL database, which is backed up, optimized for performance, and then allows those tables to be used in other areas. So again,
That's right.
I
And
makes it
sorry,
better to me.
Robert, just to add to that, another key point with Access that you don't get with Excel is data integrity. And I think that's an important feature as well. So it will structure your data in a way that Excel potentially will allow you to break because there is no fixed structure there.
And that's very important, because if we're doing data modeling, the most important thing is to understand how our data relates to each other. So if we have, for example, a list of contact names, and again, if you have people who share the same address, which is typically the case, what you want is a database with the first name, last name, and maybe a database with the address, so that you can link the person from one database to the address in the other database. And that means that if you get a person with the same address, basically you don't have to go out and create a second record in that other database. You can then refer to the one that's already there. So that's where you're getting the performance improvement and also the minimized size, because you're able to do things intelligently.
That's right, and I think that's referred to as normalizing the data. So you don't want to have redundancy, or sorry, replication of the same data over and over, because obviously management becomes an issue, especially when that grows out to a large number.
And again, I think what we see is typically, with most office applications, we see that most customers or most people are using the office applications only at their most basic level. These desktop applications, and Access is a very good example, are extremely powerful. They have a huge amount of potential there that could benefit a business, but typically in my experience you only see people using 10%. I mean, and to me that's such a shame, because they could have the application do a lot of things they need for their business, but they just aren't aware that they have a tool that will actually perform that.
Yeah, that's right. And I think as well, there have been limitations around having the infrastructure there to support that, which is obviously the benefit of Office 365. Anyone can now do this. You can create an Access database up in Office 365 and it's available. It's just a few clicks. So I think that was one of the barriers, which has now gone away. I think with a bit of education, people will really start to embrace the additional features.
Well, I think also too, unfortunately, there's a bit of user training here. I mean, there's so much feature, there's so much power, but how do users actually, learn how to use these features, or get in contact with people who can show them or develop them for them? I think that's the big challenge we face at the moment is actually how to understand what these products can do.
Yeah, definitely. And look, I think it always starts with a problem that needs to be solved. That's the best way to go about this, of course. But in that situation, then how do they get in touch with someone who knows the answer?
And part of it is that, you know, there are a couple of different courses that, you know, we can take in this. You can either learn the application yourself or get someone in your staff to learn it. You can employ a specialist to do it, so bring somebody on board that has the skills, or you can outsource that. Now, in all three cases, the recommendation is I think you need to have at least some basic understanding of what the product is, what it can do, what its limitations are, and what its feature set is, so that you can then firstly make the decision as to what is best. Now, I see so many people wanting to maybe do an access application, and they define it, and then they, you know, get a developer, and they outsource, and it does what they want, and then when they want to make changes, they can't get in touch with the developer, or the developer's moved on, or the developer doesn't want to support that, and then they're a bit lost because they've got absolutely no idea about the application. So I think at the very base level, it's very important for all business to have some basic understanding of what all these products can do for them, including the Office 365 platform, and that's difficult because obviously there's a lot of new stuff coming, but I think that's an important basis on which they need to understand so that they can make a decision what's best for their business going forward and keep control of their destiny when it comes to technology.
Yep, I definitely agree with that, Robert. And that is a very common problem that you did mention earlier of the developer moves on and the business is stuck. So yeah, the more you can empower yourself with knowledge, obviously the less risk there is of that happening. And as we've discussed, it is possible to do a lot of this stuff on your own now. It just requires a little bit of time and there's plenty of information online to help you.
And I think, again, that's part of the challenge is that, you know, if you're going to use these tools, you do need to spend some time. And the other thing too, I think, which is, you know, you don't see very much of is, you know, documentation. So if you're creating an Access app or an Excel spreadsheet or whatever, a little bit of documentation around that is going to save you a whole lot of pain down the track so that when you do revisit it, you've got some idea of what's going on. So many times I've seen that, you know, you have to maybe do a server migration or migrate something, and there's this one Access app or there's one app on a server, and of course when you move it to something else, it completely breaks everything. It breaks that app totally because it's been hard coded to the server name, and nobody knows how it fits together and why does this happen, why does that happen. So again, it can certainly solve your problems, but if not done correctly, it can certainly cause a lot of problems when things change.
Yeah, that's right. Documentation is essential, but of course, something that we don't all enjoy all that much. So,
and I think part of it is now we've got a tool like Office 365 and we've got cloud-based applications, we can now put it in a central location and we can refer to it. And again, it's basically just a business discipline to do that, which is something that should be done basically with all the processes. But for all the tools that we seem to have available, it just seems to me that nobody, or very few people, seem to get around to providing good documentation on these sort of processes.
Yeah, that's right. And I think you've nailed it there by saying it's a business process and it's a discipline, and there really is no excuse not to do it now with all this cloud infrastructure available. Everything is stored in a central place, so it's just a matter of doing it.
Well, I think it too, and it's a matter of spending some time and just learning the some of the applications. So, you know, people come to me and say, look, you know, how do I learn this? How do I get up to speed quickly? I mean, I think, again, there are a number of different options, but at the end of the day, you do need to set aside a certain amount of time every week or on a regular basis to work through this. Now, whether you get someone in to train you, whether you sit down and nut it out yourself, it's so important to do this sort of thing because the productivity gains that can be achieved by doing something very simple can be absolutely astronomical. And this is also very true, I think, with, you know, the desktop applications and the platforms you're using. I mean, so I see so many people, you know, opening one window, closing another, opening a window, when they could snap them using Windows to either side of their screen. So just simple things like that can make huge productivity gains.
Oh, definitely. And Robert, is that something that you are offering your clients?
Well, look, I'm finding that, you know, a lot of people need that, and I go to them and sort of say, look, you know, my advice is that you do need to understand this. And typically the biggest struggle is the initial hump. So trying to get people up and over that first hump to understanding it is the best solution, is generally just some basic training. And it's not rocket science. It doesn't have to be involved, but in a lot of cases, it just opens their eyes. So certainly something that I would encourage, and certainly something that I do provide. When we go in and do a SharePoint deployment, one of the things that I always put in first generally is I have a getting started with SharePoint template, which basically has 22 odd lessons that they can then click through. It's got video training and also some documentation and further links. The reason that I do that is that, you know, that allows them then, if they want to do some SharePoint training on their own time and share it amongst their organization. And again, once they get over that initial hump, then they begin to understand, then they can start moving forward. I think, again, the biggest struggle is, and I assume you, same as for you, is just sometimes getting those customers or end users conceptually to the point where they can actually tell you what they're after.
Yeah, definitely. And look, starting out, this can be overwhelming. I've definitely seen that a number of times. So having that material would certainly help. And I'd be interested to know just how well that works for you, Robert.
Well, I think, again, part of it depends on the customer. And I think that I think you've got to provide typically a range of these sort of training services or these sort of induction services. So the first one is obviously self-service. You can send people links and they can go away. Microsoft's got a huge amount of information around SharePoint. So discoversharepoint.com is a very good example of this, where you can go to a website that Microsoft have created and maintain, and they keep up to date with a number of different scenarios that you can use. Now, the other good thing about discoversharepoint.com is that it has an app you can add into the app, an app in the SharePoint Online App Store that you can add into your SharePoint tenant. So again, a couple of clicks, and I have written a blog article on that, is how you can add that app into any SharePoint tenant, and that's a great way to get people started with SharePoint. So from there, you can then sort of start adding stuff up.
And Robert, does that app, how does that work? Because I imagine that does it place itself strategically throughout SharePoint to give contextual help, or is it just...
No, basically it links off to the discoversharepoint.com site, but it's basically delivered as an app. So typically what you would do is, in my case, is you would create maybe a training site collection, so a completely separate site for users to work with SharePoint. Into that, I would put the discoversharepoint.com app. I would also put my template area, and this would be a play area. This would be a development area that users could come in and they could fiddle around with in full comfort, the fact that if they did anything, it wouldn't affect the production system. So generally create a totally separate sandbox with all the training materials in which the users can come and play around with, and then from there you develop your production site from there. So again, there are plenty of options to include. And getting the users over that initial hump is just so important. Once they do that, they understand SharePoint, they understand the benefits, and then they can then tell you what business processes they want moved into a SharePoint environment.
Yeah, that sounds like a great approach. Now, one thing I do want to ask you, Robert, you mentioned that you've got some video training in there, is that right?
Yeah, so what I've done is I've spent many, many years doing things on YouTube. So I have my own YouTube channel at youtube.com/... what is it? Oh, I can't remember now off the top of my head. I can't remember. It's always get it back to front here. That's not very professional, is it? So what it is, it's youtube.com/director CIA ops. And in there, you'll find a huge range of videos. Now, what I did was created, obviously, 22 odd videos around SharePoint training. But in there, you'll find ones on OneDrive and creating site collections and that. So I've bundled all that up with some documentation and made it a template. So those videos are certainly available for free on my YouTube channel. But they're, again, put into a nice structure using the SharePoint template. And it's a good example of how businesses can use SharePoint to deliver some sort of training, whether that's SharePoint in my case, or occupational health and safety, or, you know, maybe something around office documentation or whatever. So I think, you know, that's a really encouraging thing and something that any business can do.
Definitely. And the next thing I was going to ask you, Robert, is will you be moving those YouTube videos into Office 365 video?
So, I mean, I've moved some of them up there. I think that the benefit that YouTube provides is obviously is you get a bit of Google, obviously get a lot of Google juice doing it for, you know, SEO, those sort of things. Moving it into its own portal makes a lot of sense. It'll be interesting to see the performance. I think that what I'd like to understand from the video side of it is how well to be able to template that. So if I could take that somehow and then push that out and to others so others can use it and reuse it, because obviously the videos are very large and they've got to be stored in Azure. So that's the part that I'm interested in discovering, is how to actually move the video content, because that's really a limitation.
And I imagine that being very new, I think, how long ago did Office 365 video get released? It was maybe only 2 weeks ago. Is
Yeah,
that about right?
3 weeks ago. It hasn't been very
Okay.
long at all.
Yeah. So I imagine in terms of features, there's not a lot there, as I understand it. And when I say there's not a lot there, I mean, there's a lot there in terms of it being a video portal. But beyond that, I don't think they've rolled out too much more. Is that a pretty accurate
Well,
statement,
I
Robert?
think the thing is, obviously, they've got the service out there, they've got people using it. Now you've got to get the developers on board and people understanding how it works and, again, how we can manipulate some of the content. I think it's designed, obviously, for a user to upload their own content and then use it. For someone like myself who wants to use that as a base and then reuse that, maybe the ability is to share that component publicly and then allow others to consume that from your own Office 365 tenant. Or maybe because now it's in Azure, we can use the Azure backend to reach in and get those videos. That may be another option. So I think at the end of the day, there's sort of a lot to learn, but the potential is there. And if it's, the performance and the optimization that can be done through Azure and the content delivery network, certainly going to give us a lot of options to achieve that.
Yeah.
And perhaps get away from this disparate system where we've got, something in SharePoint Online, but it's actually referring back to, YouTube videos, which is, look, does the job great, but it does have some limitations.
Right. So, and what I'm trying to get my head around here is, because I understand, the way I've seen it presented is that Office 365 Video is basically you create a portal that's for use within your own SharePoint site collection. Would that
Well, I
is
think
that
it seems to be within your own tenant. So you create the video thing comes within your own tenant. It's obviously based on SharePoint, but where does it, its own site collection and, how's it stored and where's it stored and how do you refer to it? I think we're still early days for that.
Okay, so watch this space is the
Yeah, I
message
think it
or
is. It's a matter of just going in there and someone like myself, going in there and trying this, pulling it apart. Okay, how do I share a video publicly? What's the limitations? But it gives you a lot of additional features like things like likes and how often it's viewed and I think in there it gives you an idea of when people drop out of the video and again it's what content we can also build around that. So I think it'll mature over time and it's just a matter of getting in there and having a play with it, but I think it's a fantastic feature.
Yeah, and one thing I did see is that videos in Delve, so assuming Delve is also a very new product, but Delve, they've got a special tile just for the Office 365 video. Have you seen that, Robert?
Yeah, exactly. So again, we're looking at the functionality bringing all this together. So at the moment, it's probably aimed at a single tenant, but yeah, when used correctly, extremely powerful. So maybe part of it is that I could provide a template, and then the videos could be uploaded into the customer's own video area in Office 365, and then referenced and pushed out through there. So again, plenty of options, but again, it's such a new service that we need to get our heads around it, but I think it's a great option. That's something that's going to give end users a lot of benefit, but also potentially developers and people like myself, content creators, going to give them the opportunity to take advantage of it as well.
Definitely. Now, another thing that I did see on that is on the internal, I guess, keeping it to internal use, they've actually created a Yammer integration with Office 365 video. So you can actually see a discussion happening
Yep. So
around that video, which
it would
is.
seem that the video is typically like a document. So in SharePoint Online, you can have a Yammer discussion around a document. So typically, if you have Yammer enabled, you go into a document, you'll see a little, I suppose, a little slider bar on the right-hand side. If you pull that across, that's your Yammer conversation. Now, because the video is typically a file, the Yammer integration will be obviously enabled around that as well. And it just displays a little different in the video portal. But again, when you think about it, it's just a pure document and there's no reason that can't be used around a Yammer discussion as well. So imagine again, some sort of training video where people go in and comment and say, look, this is great, but I didn't understand this, or I'd like to see this, or what's the next video? And I think, again, that's where we're beginning to see that, again, the strength of the Office 365 product is the not only do you get a new video service, but you get an integration with the Delve, the Office Graph, and you also get integration with Yammer. So again, all these products suddenly pull together very quickly without any additional features. So some of the competitors, again, their interconnection is very, very clunky. But obviously, when Microsoft brings out a new service like Office 365, videos, it's automatically integrated with Yammer through, you know, SharePoint, all this sort of stuff automatically. So that's the big advantage, I think.
Oh, definitely. And I think that's really powerful stuff. And I think it's fantastic. I really can't wait to see how that plays out. But I do think we are now at a stage with Office 365 where we've really broken through that point of, I guess, early days, if you like. And I'm really seeing everything sort of tie together now. And it's tying together beautifully. I think the next couple of years are just going to continue to be exciting times around this space, because the rate of change is just phenomenal. And seeing it all come together, it really gives me a lot of ideas about how this can be used and how powerful it is. I mean, you probably think the same thing. Am I right, Robert?
Well, again, I think the thing is it's a double-edged sword. I think the fact is that, like I said, there is so much opportunity. There's so many things that you can do, so many paths you can go down, and again, make it work for yourself in your business, or make it work for a customer and provide a service. Now, the other side of the coin is, you know what? There's probably too much now. I mean, if you have to keep up with this stuff, if you have to develop it, if you have to understand it, if you have to train customers, there is too much. So part of it is that if you're a smaller organization, as I've said, you need to look at specializing. You need to say, look, these are the areas I'm going to focus on. And I believe one of the areas you're focusing on, obviously, is the access side of the coin. And then you need to tee up, you know, and partner up with others who can do the components you don't do. So, again, for people who are looking to do the access side, again, they can certainly get in contact with Taz and leverage off his knowledge and what the apps that he can build, and they can provide those to their customers as well as for their own business. So I think that, to me, that's the secret. It is great. There's a huge amount of opportunity, but on the other side, that opportunity can also be overwhelming and actually divert you from what you should be focused on.
Definitely. And look, I think if you are a business owner, an IT business owner, then you really need to be looking at this stuff very closely, I would think. And going to things like the Office 365 meetups, I know from my experience, they've been very valuable. So there's a little tip for any IT business owners out there.
Yeah, go to meetup.com, and if you do a search for Office 365 in your area, you'll certainly find probably a meetup group or a user group that's around Office 365. And again, that's a good place to build relationships, build knowledge, and work forward with this product and find out, you know, the people you need to team with. You know, if you need someone to do training, if you need someone to do access style development, if you need someone to do, you know, Excel development, Power BI, that's the place you need to be looking.
Definitely. And interestingly, the Melbourne Office 365 meetup group is actually now merging with the SharePoint user group in Melbourne. So it's really gaining a bit of momentum, and it's an exciting place to be. So highly recommend it.
Well, we saw that. I mean, the same thing basically is happening in Sydney here. We had on the weekend, we had SharePoint Saturday, which I spoke at. And what they basically said is, this is the last SharePoint Saturday. What they're going to do now is going to be called an Office 365 Saturday. So we're seeing that merging. Basically, the Office 365 banner is now pulling in all these products. But again, part of it is you're going to have Exchange specialist, SharePoint specialist, Link specialist, but it will all come under that banner. And the good thing is, like I said, it just removes that hassle of setting those sort of things up. I think it's never been easier to set up an Office 365 tenant, even as a trial, get the user up and running with SharePoint, with Access, with desktop apps, with Link and whatever else, and get them actually using that latest technology. Then the trick is to make sure that they're actually using it, engaging with it, and they see the potential.
That's right, yeah, absolutely.
Cool. All right. Well, we probably need to round this off, I think, because we need to be cognizant of everybody's time. Are there any sort of, you know, comments or whatever, some summary of what we've covered today, especially on the access side? And, you know, if people want to get in contact with you, what services can you provide with them around the access and the access online stuff?
Yeah, well, look, firstly, if anyone does want to talk to me about the access side of things in Office 365 please do get in touch. You can find my contact details on our website, which is www.axiomit.com.au. And look, Access can do a lot of things. There are many applications for it. If you've got, I guess, something in mind, or you see a problem in your business that you think Access might be able to solve, then we can have a discussion, put together a plan potentially, and then we basically build that app on your behalf and publish it up into your tenant.
Good. Okay. And I think also too, you could probably look after some Access on-premise if they have, anybody has customers that are in that sort of space as well.
Oh, definitely, yeah. If you're still running, I guess you would call that a legacy application now, would you, Robert? I'm not sure. But yeah, we can certainly help with that too. So plenty of experience there.
So again, I think Access is one of those apps that we do see in a lot of applications, a lot of places, but we, you know, a lot of people struggle with them because they just don't do it day to day. So it's important, I think, to have that sort of content, and obviously TAS is able to provide that sort of service. And I think going forward, it's going to become more and more a requirement, or more and more an opportunity to move customers' data into these bigger data sets and present a web front. And especially when we look at the whole Internet of Things, and again the other option here, we've also got the Azure side of it. So have you spent any time mucking around with the specific Azure side of it, the SQL stuff in Azure?
Oh, look, not a great deal. I have been playing around with Azure quite a bit, but it's not so much on that side, but more on the identity side. I've had a lot of fun in there. So, but you know, there's another thing on my list of things to do, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, I was going to say, there you go. That's what you can start doing once we finish the podcast. You get off.
That's right.
Your homework for next time is to learn all that sort of stuff. So I think with that, what we need to do is draw this podcast to an end. I'll again thank everybody for listening to this episode. If you do need to get in contact with me, you can do so via my website, ciaops.com. Again, on the Twitter, I'm at DirectorCIA. And the best option for all information about Office 365 and keeping up to date with these technologies is at my blog, blog.ciaops.com. But again, I'll take this opportunity to thank Taz for his time today. Thank him for the information that he shared. Hope that everybody got some value out of this. Remember, you can always contact us and let us know what you would like to hear on the show, what we'd like to focus, and if you've got any questions, we certainly welcome those. And I'll put all the details up on the show notes for the podcast. But with that, again, thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, and thank you for having me, Robert. I'll see you next time.
No worries. Thanks for that. This episode was brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.